Welcome to the Effective Engineering Manager podcast.
It's good to be here, Adam. It's your time today. What do you want to talk about?
Great to be here, Slava, as well. Today, we're going to continue with our Effective Agile series, and today's topic is going to be Effective Agile Estimation, which is, I think, a very important topic. I think it's one of the foundational pillars of being able to do Effective Agile. What has been your experience with doing estimation on agile teams, and has that worked well for you in the past?
Well, it's definitely been a struggle for my directs, for sure. And pretty much every team that I've taken on agile and taken on the agile path, they struggled initially. I somehow got good understanding of how it works from get-go, maybe because I'm certified as a Scrum Master very early on. But rest of the teams usually needed some time. What about you? Tell me.
Yeah, similar. And I think it takes a while to realize that it's a problem and then even understand what to do. You know, in our previous episode on Agile, you know, we talked a lot about academic Agile versus practical Agile. And I think if you look at the academic Agile, you know, it makes it look like planning and estimation are easy, right? It's like, you just have a backlog, you sit in a room and you estimate and you just go off and do it and everything suddenly kind of magically comes together. In practical use case, it doesn't. And I think you kind of alluded to it there that engineers by nature are, especially software engineers, are oriented around, I think, two challenges that inhibit effective estimation. One is software engineers write code. They, regardless of what they do, they always have in their back of their mind, okay, this is the code that I have to write. They know that's the code that has to get written. They know the end goal. It's, you know, they know what's coming out of the black box and they just have to get there. And they're used to just sitting down, writing code and letting it go and then just keep checking themselves, testing, rewriting code, testing, etc. And, you know, it starts from school when you're given, you know, projects to do, write code, and you compensate for bad estimates up front by just burning the midnight oil, right? Pulling all-nighters or putting extra effort in. And I think that mentality carries over to the workplace that engineers, because they know where they have to get to, they will work as hard as they need to get there because it's like solving a math problem, right? You know you have to get to that point, and once you get to that point, you can wave your hands and walk away. So spending the whole night doing it is okay. And I think there's this culture that's been created in software engineering to kind of embrace that, right? That, you know, I just got to push through, get this done, and I'm good. Clearly, there's challenge. You know, there's the downside of burnout and just, you know, just kind of chasing your tail. But I think the other thing is we miss an opportunity to train engineers on really what it means to be done. It's not just writing code in unit test cases. It's delivering working software that matches the intended use case and requirements for the end user or whatever the business use case is. And I think that's the other challenge with estimation is that engineers don't know how to do that part. They're not experienced in, oh, well, who do I need to share this with? Who do I need to demo this with? Who do I need to confirm this with? Or what documentation do I need to write to support this? Or do I need to update the spec? Do I need to speak with the QA team? Do I need to speak with other engineers and integrate with other parts of the system? And, you know, because those are more soft parts of the integration. Writing the code is the hard skills and the easy part, but the other parts are not. So you really have two challenges. One is, you know, being willing to just work hard and brute force your way through the code to get it done. And number two is not really having a clear definition of done. And when you don't have that definition of done, you don't really know when you're truly done. And stuff will sit there. Code might get written pretty quickly, but stuff will sit in progress almost to the last day of the sprint until you have to make a decision on moving forward. Does that resonate with some of the challenges you've seen as well?
For sure. And I think you touched an interesting point there that which I saw many, many times at this point, that academia releases computer scientists, right? And academia does not release computer engineers, right? An engineer need to be able to take on a task and land it in a decent amount of time with good quality, right? And this requires ability to plan and estimate. And estimation is fundamental for planning. So tell me more about how can we make it practical and very effective for engineering managers to make an estimation effort a bit easier, maybe more productive and effective for the team?
Absolutely. So first it starts by recognizing that estimation and planning are an important pillar, the most important pillar to doing agile. And start by thinking of the inverted pyramid. So when a requirement comes into the team to get estimated, or it's a story, if you have one, a user story, think of an inverted pyramid where the top of the pyramid is the less granular or more coarse estimate, and the bottom of the pyramid is the more granular, less coarse estimate. And you have to go through three stages of estimation, or three phases of estimation. So the requirement comes in, and the Scrum team first should look at it and do a very coarse estimate. You can use like t-shirt sizes for that. Small, medium, or large, right? Is this something that, you know, we have a good idea and it's containable, it's small enough? Is this somewhere in the middle, or is it something large, or is it just super large, right? That's the first level pass of estimation, right? If you're thinking of like this assembly line of estimation reevaluation. And then you put it into your backlog. And a lot of times the Scrum Master can do that, the product owner can do that, or anybody on the team which is just putting something in there is going to do that, right? And those stories may go into the next sprint, they may not, but when they go into the backlog, that's the first level of estimation you do. And you should have a priority with that as well. So that'll also help dictate when you look at that next. Second level of estimation is story points. And I think this is where things get pretty important and useful for the Scrum team. So when you're doing your sprint planning, or even it can be before that, but no later than the sprint planning, you start to assign story points to that story, right? So you have something that's small, medium, or large, and the team is looking at it and say, okay, let's see if this is a medium. Okay, how much of a medium is this? And for story points, historically, Fibonacci sequence works pretty well because it, you know, why is that good as opposed to just a consecutive set? Because consecutive numbers 1 to 10 really don't give you any relative gap between two things, right? Between two measurements. So you still want to have some form of coarseness to be able to separate, say, okay, a 3 from like an 8, right? Or a 3 from a 5 even, for that matter, or an 8 from a 13. And as you move up the scale, they get further and further apart because they're less estimatable. So at that planning session or before, you assign story points to that, right? And you're doing that pass. So now you have something that is a medium. Let's say, for example, you estimate it as a team and you say, okay, that's actually an 8 in the story point scheme. It may not even fit in one sprint. So now you have to say, okay, this is too big for us to take on in one sprint. We have to break it down. Or you might have something on the opposite end where you thought it was a medium, but actually it turns out it's only 2 story points because maybe you already had some code that you can leverage and it's very similar to something you've done before, lower risk, and you know, a lot of the boilerplate code or libraries are already there. And then, you know, it's just a matter of just updating it, right? So you've done that second pass, right? And as I mentioned, I haven't yet mentioned ownership yet, right? Because at this point, the team still owns the backlog. And I think it's very important that the first two phases of estimation involve the team, right? It's not, no one owns it yet, because you can't own it until it's been well enough estimated. I think that's part of the problem, is we give people tasks and say, you have to do this, and we don't even give them a chance to go through this process. So once you have story points and you've decided that's important for the next sprint, it's going to get in the sprint, and it will fit in the sprint is based on the story point assessment. Now you assign it to somebody on the team, and they break it down into hours. The third level of breakdown of a story, of a task or story in this case. And they're breaking it down into hours. So they're taking a story that has been now assigned to them, so they own it, and they're going to break it down into tasks or subtasks, right? And those tasks are the implementation pieces that need to get done. And so because they're actual work, we measure them in finite units of work, which is hours or days, right? Or ideally hours, because then you can at least get stuff done within a day if you need to, right? And we'll get to that in a minute. And this, at this point, the team has already evaluated, given some input. So the person working on it has some context, and they know they own this story to completion. So they have to break it down into enough tasks that are going to give them sufficient confidence that it will meet their definition of done. Okay. At the same time, you're empowering the team to estimate, right? You're not, as a manager or scrum master, you're not saying, hey, this is a small thing, go off and do it, right? You're empowering the team, and you're giving because you're empowering the team, you're giving them the opportunity to tell how much time they'll need to take on it. For me, a two-story point story might take a day and a half. For you, it might take a half a day, or it may take 3 days, right? That's okay. We're not trying to equate story points with units of work universally. What we're trying to do is empower the individual to think through everything that individual needs to do to get that thing done. We're making it success-oriented for them or that individual to get to the point where everything that's needed to complete that task is done, right? So you're giving them all the tools they need. You're giving them the backing of the team from the previous estimates and context. And the team can also help contribute there as well as necessary. So this inverted pyramid and this three-phase approach to estimation, along with empowering the team, really, I think, makes a big difference with how it's presented to the team. And it's less, you know, it becomes less intrusive to the team when their people are working together for the first time, or you have new engineers, because they look at this and they feel less threatened by it. They say, oh, okay, you know, I'm going to just take it, you know, I'm going to take it to phase one, to phase two, and we're in phase three now, and I own this, and, you know, I have flexibility on how long this will take. And so they're focused on the things that matter, which is, what do I need to do to get this done? Not about what I'm supposed to be doing, or what I'm told to be doing, or, you know, am I going to get yelled at for not getting that done. Does that make sense? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's you have a very good point about empowering the team and not forcing them into a particular time scale, right? Each engineer has to think through what is it going to take, or what is the measure of effort, right? Which is the story points, right? Story points are not time, right? And it's okay. I think it's important for managers to be cognizant of the fact that they should not push them into this is how a story point translates to a particular time, right? Each engineer will develop their own sense of story points. And over time, they will have a better idea and less deviation from team's estimation. But especially initially, I think it's very important not to push.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what I think we're training engineers out of this is that it's not about them reporting up, right? They're not trying to match. They're not trying to report to their manager. They're not trying to make things look good. It's about reporting to themselves. The point of breaking things down in hours and allowing the person owning the story to do it is for their own good. It's not for me as the scrum master, right? I mean, it's not that I'm going to, me even cracking a whip is going to help, right? It's about the individual saying, okay, I have a plan for myself, right? Now, that plan may not always be 100% accurate, and that's okay, and we'll get to adjustments in a bit, but at least you have a plan, you're working off a plan, and it's your plan, right? It's not the person next to you's plan, it's not your manager's plan, it's your plan, you own it, and it helps with the daily stand-ups because then people are not only empowered to own their stuff, but to really feel confident that they can track their work to completion. They have the path in front of them. And, you know, certainly if things don't work out, then we reevaluate next sprint, and that's okay. But yeah, definitely not being intimidating. The next thing is that the definition of done should also help drive the estimation. So when you're thinking of all the things that need to be included, you should always go back to and have as a team a formal definition of done. It's like your team's charter. It's your motto, right? It should be something the team is prideful in. And definition of done can change over time. It can grow, but it should be clear to every person on the team. And it should include everything that you typically need to do. And from one organization to another, there may be some subtleties that are very different. At a minimum, it should include code complete, unit testing and coverage. Should include integrated testing where applicable. It should include automation tests. It should include a demo. It should include the ability to, whatever the process is, to release it to your QA team and beyond, and whatever handholding you need. It should include documentation. Maybe you have to update that design doc or that running design doc that you have as a team or spec, so that you can track that. If you're, you know, a web application or mobile application group, maybe you need artwork or UX, right? So all these things have to be incorporated into the definition of done, and it should be very clear. And that's something that should be enforced. And when you're reviewing the story, say, okay, did we cover everything for definition of done? I can't tell you how many times I've sat with some of my younger agile teams and just like a broken record, when we do planning, okay, is everything for definition of done there? Is everything for definition of done there, right? And it's a checklist that they should have and be able to look at and plan every time they're putting a story together. And once you have that, and you've done this the first few sprints consistently, you will start to determine the average velocity for your team. And that will also feed into your next rounds of estimation and planning. On average, I have found that one story point takes about 1.5 to 2 days on average when you have a team that's consistent over time, right? And don't use that empirically as a absolute formula, but that's about what it is. The point is you want to know what is your team's average velocity, right? Because then you know how much you reasonably can do each sprint. And after 5 or 6 sprints, if you have a measure of your velocity, you can plan better, and you can maybe you want to back off a little bit and say, okay, we'll do about 90% of what we know our velocity is, because we want to use the 10% to harden our quality. And on top of that, don't assume a full 8-hour workday. I've used sometimes 6-hour workdays on average, right? Because people have meetings, people need time to think. People have time to do one-on-ones, need time to, go to the bathroom, have lunch, attend other sessions the company is offering, or even just to breathe. Or more importantly, have a little bit of buffer built into the capacity if your estimates are off, right? So if I've planned a story that I think is going to take me 2 days, right? If I use the 6-hour a day estimate for my planning, and I really need to spend a couple extra hours on it because maybe I missed something or I wanted to add a little piece of code here, I can kind of accommodate for that, right? Because I have that kind of built in there, at least to the absolute time in the sprint. So again, it's about success-oriented approach. You know, we're not trying to fill up, we're not filling cows in the barn. We're dealing with humans. We're dealing with thoughtful work that is oftentimes challenging, that oftentimes requires iteration, and we don't want to overload our folks with things that are going to put them in a worse situation, or potentially having to work even harder. So to get to a point where you can determine the average velocity of your team, measure against that, and use things like a 6-hour workday instead of an 8-hour workday to count for the capacity available in that sprint. And I'll tell you, it's that sounds easy and it sounds straightforward, but getting the team to really understand and buy into that takes time, right? I mean, everybody knows 6 hours, and if it's a 2-week sprint, okay, that's 10 days, that's 60 work hours, right? And anybody can plan their work up front and try to add up to 60 hours and make sure they're full. But again, in reality, what happens day over day is different, right? Because you're dealing with being dynamic in the daily challenges. So those are a couple good principles as far as letting the definition of done drive the estimation, measuring velocity from that, and using some common success-oriented metrics for capacity. What do you think about that? Has that worked with how you've used built agile teams in the past?
Yes, and I think it's a good idea to give the team a bit of time to develop this time frame. After that, they can do estimations of the average velocity, right? And what I've seen, I think the main challenge beginning of the agile process many teams are facing is management comes in and says, when is it going to be done? Right? And they say, well, we estimated our sprint, it's like, 400 points. And what usually you hear, I don't care about your points. Tell me when you're going to be ready. Right? And what I've seen, many agile practitioners, especially in the beginning of their careers, they freak out. And what the end result is that they insist on teaching or educating management on how they're not going to use time at all. And I think it's extremely impractical, right? Because we deliver products on tight time frames, oftentimes connected with holidays, Black Fridays, particular events. For example, if, let's say, someone wants to present a Java one or go out with Amazon with the announcement at AWS reInvent, right? No matter what the story points are, we have to land by a given time, right? And what I've noticed is that it's critical to give the team space and negotiate with the senior staff, maybe give them 2, ideally 3 months, practice estimation, practice story points. And after 3 months, team may have landed, a team of 10 people may have landed good, 300-600 story points. After this, we can take that statistically looking better number and divide by the number of man hours and come up with a man hour per story point and then come up with a day, right? It's a simple arithmetics. So it's very important to give, at least negotiate initial time frame for the team to get accustomed to estimating and story points. Like you said, estimation and story points is very important because it unblocks people from this paralysis of trying to estimate large tasks in time, right? It's just impossible, right? Well, some people are good at it. I'm good at it because I know how to do it. But the majority of the people would struggle. And yet saying, hey, never done it before, looks tough, lots of new technologies, requirements, use cases, that's 10 story points. And we won't argue with them because that's their level of confidence, how they're going to land it. That's how was just sort of triggered my thinking when you said it. So what else, what other practical suggestions do you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's true, right? The law of law of physics and law of averages are always going to dominate, right? I mean, it's, if it's going to take me 10 days to do something or 10 days for the team to do something, that's no matter how hard you work, even if you're over-optimized, I mean, it'll still take that much time. I mean, if you have to write that much code, you have to do that much investment in testing and whatnot, it's going to be there. So absolutely knowing the velocity of the team, and kind of being able to estimate that is always going to help you. So one last point on that before we get into the post planning kind of estimation management is, we don't want folks to necessarily feel they have to fill their capacity, right? I mean, even though you might have 60 hours in the sprint, we don't, until a team is well-trained on this, you should try, the goal should not be to try to pack everyone's 60-hour sprint. The focus should be on making sure that what they do put in the sprint can land. They get in a habit of, you know, can I land a one-story point story easily, a two-story point story, a three-story point story, right? And get consistent with that before you start trying to, you know, pack everything in. Because what happens there is, if I try to fill up my whole sprint, let's say there's two or three stories that I've planned for myself. If that first story doesn't land in the amount of time that I said it would, it's a domino effect. Now, the second one's going to be impacted. The third one may be impacted. And also, we end up encouraging, somewhat indirectly, that you should be able to work on multiple things at one time. And that never works, because I may have three small stories that I plan for the sprint, but if I'm working on them in parallel, the odds are that I'll end up spending more on each one of them than I had planned than if I did them in sequence when I'm focused on them, right? I mean, if they're very trivial things and you're touching the exact same code and it's line of code here, line of code there, maybe not. But on average, I've seen this happen, and you end up having three stories in progress the whole sprint without much visibility other than just the task you're pushing through. And the engineers think, oh, I got this. I'm going to be able to just, you know, balance as much as I can, and it doesn't work that way. And that's really kind of goes against agile anyways. You really want to push the high priority items first and then do that. So don't worry about filling your capacity. Absolute worst case, you could leave something in the backlog, and if you have free time in the sprint, just go to the backlog and pull it in. You know, this is where things like burn down charts and all that may start to get slightly skewed, but if the team's practices are crisp and you're estimating well, you will ultimately get things done that you need to. So now into some of the next items that can definitely help. So once you've done upfront planning and estimation, now you have to manage those estimates throughout the course of the sprint. And that's the other half of estimation. Anybody can sit here and plan and put a plan together, but executing that plan and reevaluating estimates as necessary is just as important. So we already just talked about this, one working on one story at a time, right? So that's the first thing. Second thing is, in your daily stand-up, when people are talking about what they did yesterday, what they're doing today, make sure we are checking against what the actual estimate was, right? And as a Scrum Master, this is a skill you kind of have to practice and be alert to. If someone is working on a two-story point story and they're stuck on it and they're working on it for 3 or 4 days or 5 days or whatever, or more time than they allocated to it, now you got to start questioning. Say, okay, wait a minute, this was a two-story point story. You've already spent more time on that. Did we miss some things? Or what can we do to adjust it, right? So you're already starting to identify and potentially course correct. You may even need to say to somebody else on the team, hey, can you help out with this story as well, right? And that's where this team concept comes into play, right? We, even though someone owns a story, if someone else can help pull something that may be necessary to deliver it, you may need to do that. Worst case, and it's not something you should always do. So the stand-ups should be your place to verify that plan every day. Next thing is be able as an individual to declare some kind of a victory each day. You come into work, you go to your Jira board or whatever your sprint dashboard is, say, okay, I'm in the middle of this story. My plan today is to work on this task. This task said I estimated as 4 hours. If I start it today and I'm not interrupted, I should be able to complete it today, right? I got my 6 hours, 4 hours in, should be done, right? It's a checkpoint for yourself each and every day. And that sense of being able to close something out is not only beneficial to the team, but it's beneficial to each individual to feel like they're making progress. Because if we don't do that and we just have tasks that are the full duration of the story, like if you have one big blob task that is 2 days long, you really don't get any feedback until 2 days in, right? And what is that? That's like mini waterfall. So Every day, you should be able to start the day, say, this is the task I'm going to work on. Make sure that's your focus, drive it to completion, and be able to declare victory on that task by the next daily stand-up. And I've seen that work. And when I started instituting that with my teams, a light bulb went off. I mean, people were actually like, oh, wow, you know, I'm actually visible. I've actually have visibility to my work, and I'm making sure things are getting done. I'm actually able to say this is done. And I'm actually able to know if I'm blocked on this. Or I may have spent 4 hours and say, you know what? I really need another hour and a half on this. Okay, no problem. We're not going to penalize you for that. You're managing your own time. But at least you've identified that you're off from the initial estimate and you're doing your own course correction. All right, so declaring victory each day. And that's something that the Scrum Master should continue to drive. So when you have your stand up, say, okay, what did you do yesterday? Okay, you worked on this task. Okay, I see it's moved to done. Great job. Keep up the great work, right? It's that feedback loop as well that really kind of instills confidence in your team members and vice versa. The next thing is, if you have the advantage of having integrated testers with the team or people that are doing the testing support for you, they should be locked in. They should be in lockstep and locked in to the work that's being done on the story they are testing. Don't wait for that development work to be done to start writing your tests or get involved. The testers should, from the very beginning of the sprint or the beginning when that story starts, to be aligned with the developer, right? That serves two purposes. One, it ensures that your integrated testing will be done coincident with the development being done. But it'll also act as a checkpoint to the developer or developers that are working on the story, right? It's another way to keep that feedback loop continuous, regular, and daily. And if the testers are writing those tests in parallel, they'll be able to ask questions. They'll be able to give feedback while they're in the code. And we know that when we fix things, when we're in the code, it's a lot cheaper than any stage later in the game and certainly reduces the need for any technical debt. So having integrated testers write tests in parallel with the development is key. And those folks that are working together on that story should meet up at least for 5 or 10 minutes each day. If they're in remote locations, you know, good on a web conference or chat on Slack or whatever your communication mechanism is, right? Keep the dialogue going. You know, we sometimes look at testers as the after product of development. But testers should be 100% involved and take just as much pride in delivering that feature or story as the developer is, right? And that same thing goes with UX designers or anybody else contributing to that story. You all are working together to deliver something. In the end, it's the sum of all those things that is going to be what is of value to the end user. So anybody involved with the story should be working together on their functional areas at the same time as much as possible. So those are some of the key things that you should do while estimating up front and then following through with those estimates. And as a goal, anytime you're doing estimates or planning, you should encouraging covering as many inputs as possible. So when you're doing sprint planning or even before that, the whole Scrum team should be involved in contributing. When you're in the middle of the sprint and a challenge comes up, the whole Scrum team should be involved with that. When folks are working on a story together and you feel like you have to make course correction, whoever's working on that together should make those decisions. Because the more inputs that you have or the more forces that you have working together with you to keep things moving, the more successful you're going to be. If you have a development team that everybody just goes back to their desks and buries their head in their code and doesn't talk to anybody else until the end of the sprint, You're really not doing agile, and I think you're missing opportunities to become better at planning and estimating and dynamically managing the changes and challenges that do come up. What do you think about that, Slava?
Yes, definitely, these are good points, and I just wanted to touch on a couple of things that you just mentioned. And number one is watching for things beginning to fall off the plan. And I think there's a couple of things. We need to be a bit careful when we should be cognizant of why things beginning to take longer than estimated number of story points, right? And I think the legitimate use case that we should be watching for as managers is when an engineer begins to go off track, right? So we started with, you know, let's say, 1-2 story points exercise, maybe, you know, a couple of days, maybe 3, right? And it's been, you know, thought of for stand up and they're still working on it, right? So it's a good, I think it's a good opportunity to check in with them after the stand up and try to understand what is going on, right? Maybe they, you know, started digging too deep. Maybe they went on it, you know, sideways and started developing a mini framework to accommodate future use cases, right? If that's the case, I think it's completely natural to softly intervene and, you know, have a discussion, like, and say, hey, you know, this can go after this. Let's finish the sprint. Let's push it into the demo, make it work, and then do some optimization or, you know, reuse, right? But the second situation is when it's just a pure estimation mistake, and everyone makes mistakes. I made maybe more than most of the people I know, right? In these cases, managers, or if you have a dedicated Scrum Master, they have to be able to recognize that, hey, engineer thought it's going to be, you know, easy peasy, turned out to be not that easy, right? Many edge cases and everything else, right? This is totally okay. We don't have to push. And I don't think we even have to bring it up that, hey, you know, you missed, you know, it's way too big, bigger than you thought, right? We need to watch if they accommodate their own experience in the next estimates. Because if next time they take similar task, still estimate it as a small thing, yet we know for sure it's going to be a headache, right? Then we should have a conversation and like say, hey, let's consider how you approach estimation so that you're accounting for edge cases, right? How much should you allocate? How do I approach things which are completely new, right? And we know with new things, there's no such thing as a, you know, one story point exercise. It's going to be always bigger than, you know, one story point. So that's number one, what really piqued my attention of what you said. And the second thing is on testing, I think it's very critical. It's critical that user stories are documented on some decent level, right? So it means that either product managers have to invest decent amount of time into building something that a tester can understand and build a test off it, right? And if such luxury is not available, in the beginning of the sprint, the developer and the tester should get together, and I believe the tester should interview the developer on what is the definition of done and what is the developer is going to have in the end, so that the tester can get it and start testing against that future result right when the developers begin to code, right? Because if neither of those exist, it's always going to be, you know, okay, testers didn't understand or didn't ask, they said didn't do anything, developer is done, then tester comes in and says, okay, now show me what you have built so that I can test. That's too late, right? That's important that either documentation is in place, I'm in favor of it. If not, you just interview the developer on what is going to be landed as an end product.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one thing we didn't cover here was saying whether the testers should be involved in the estimation of the story. And that's certainly another, probably a whole podcast session in itself. But the answer is really yes. I mean, why not? Testers or anybody that's on the Scrum team has the opportunity and should be contributing to providing input for what it's going to take for the team to be successful and being realistic to it. And you're right, there's a very subtle but important line between not completing a story because we didn't estimate it well and completing 80% of something fully aware that the other 20% will go into another sprint, if at all, right? When we have to course correct or when we have to make an adjustment, it's important that we identify the most important priority part of that story and make sure that that is getting done at minimum. And I've seen so many cases where I've had to make the call on that as the lead or the scrum master. Someone says, yeah, man, I underestimated this. Looks like I'm going to need to spend a few more days on this. I'm like, okay, well, you got this part of it done, right? Yes, that part's working solid. Okay, that's the core part of it. The rest is would be very nice to have. Maybe we'll do it, maybe we'll not. But getting this core piece out will give us enough feedback whether the users value this thing or not. And maybe we even go down a different path. And actually, there are a handful of times where that extra 20% just never gets done anyways, because you're constantly evolving. I mean, that's what Agile is predicated on, is that you're making adjustments every sprint. Requirements are changing, roadmaps changing, evolution of the project changes very dynamically. And that's okay. And that's okay. But we're making, so the subtle line is saying, I got this done consciously knowing I was going to get this, only this portion of it done, versus getting to the end of the sprint and saying, whoops, and not having that discussion or having that evaluation. And again, comes back to, you're empowering the team, but with empowering comes ownership and responsibility. And I think that's where we'll talk more about this, but the seeds of a strong team really come together, especially an agile team. So some great things. So I think you ready for a checklist?
Yes, I think it would be great if you could give us a good checklist so that our listeners can check and make sure that they're doing it the effective way.
Absolutely. So effective agile estimation. Here's a quick checklist. Number one, when estimating, think of the inverted pyramid and have three phases of estimation, least coarse to most coarse, right? So start with your t-shirt sizes or whatever similar, go to story points, assign it to the individual, and then they break it down into hours, right? Actual work elements. Number two, make sure your definition of done is well defined as a team, and that drives your estimation and to determine how much work is needed for that particular story, right? So each person has a checklist of their own to check against when they're doing their planning. Number three, get to a point where you can determine the average velocity of your team, know what it is, and base that off of a common metric for how many hours you work per day and what your team can get done on average in a sprint, right? So if your average velocity is X, work towards that, maybe even slightly below that, and also be consistent on how many hours a day you're counting for work. Generally, 6 hours is probably a good thing in a standard 8-hour workday. Third, encourage working on one story at a time. So until the team is really well versed on this and you're fully moving with all the great agile stuff, only work on one story at a time, right? If a person on the team shows that they're working on two stories, gently say, look, why don't you work on this one first, focus on getting that done, again, success oriented, and then move on to the next one. The next thing, be able to declare victory each day for each story that's being worked on. So when you're breaking down tasks into those hours, make sure that each task has something that's within the context of a single day to be able to complete, right? 6 hours or less, so that you can show by the next day that that task is done and you have immediate feedback day over day that things are moving. And then the last thing is make sure your integrated testers or anybody else working on the story are working in parallel with development as much as reasonably possible during the course of that story, so that there's the feedback loop and you're not expanding the overall time to complete something and, you know, basically falling back into a mini waterfall. So those are some of the key items that our listeners can start immediately. And, you know, I think estimation is such an important topic, and I hope everybody takes something of value out of this.
Adam, this is great. And I have a question. So we've been doing it for a bit, and folks who know us gave us a really great feedback and reached out and shared that feedback with us because they know our emails and our phone numbers. How the rest of our listeners can reach out to us, and if they have any feedback or suggestions for future topics?
Anybody can email us at contact@effectiveem.com, or they can subscribe to our podcast on their favorite podcast engine, whether it's Apple, iTunes, or Google, or any others, or they can go directly to our website, effectiveem.com, and you can find all our content there and be able to contact us directly.
This is good stuff, Adam. Thank you.
Certainly is, and more good stuff is coming. See you in the next episode.